Good morning. I'm Marianne Barasonic, and you're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. My guest today is Trey Arrow. He was active in the movement to save old-growth forests in the Pacific Northwest until about 2002, when he was implicated in several arsons. Trey fled to Canada, where he was arrested in 2004. He was extradited and in 2008 pled guilty to two counts of arson. He was sentenced to 78 months in prison, but with time served, he was released in 2009. Trey, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Marianne.
So let's talk a little bit about how the arrests happened, and you were indicted based on information from an FBI informant. Was this someone who was working for the FBI all along, or someone who turned when he was faced with a long sentence?
That still remains unclear. My intuition is that he was not an informant all along, unlike some others, like the woman, Anna, I believe, is one of the names that she went by, who was responsible for, example, Eric McDavid's case, where she was an informant all along and basically set him up. And he was charged with conspiracy, even though I don't know if anybody knows about his case. It's one of the most outrageous of the most recent Green Scare cases, because he received, if I'm not mistaken, he received almost 20 years for not doing anything, for allegedly, you know,
talking about it.
Yeah, you know, conspiring or planning things. And that was a deliberate entrapment, you know, by an undercover agent.
Now, was that here in the Pacific Northwest?
That was in California,
if
I'm not mistaken. In my case, Jake Sherman was the main informant. And to my knowledge, he maintained his innocence at first. And then when the heat started turning up, then that's when he decided to become an informant. That's my comprehension. I don't know.
Now, did he serve time?
He served 41 months.
Okay.
And he was looking at at least 80 years, and so in exchange to implicate me, he received a 41-month sentence. So he did, well, supposedly do time, yes.
Okay, and if you want to join in the conversation, the phone number is 503-231-8187. So let's talk about the Green Scare in general. It seems like people are faced with really long sentences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely outrageous that, you know, I think still to this day that the FBI considers the ELF the number one domestic terrorist threat in the U.S., even though the ELF has maintained a consistent effort and impact.
Now, the ELF is the
Earth Liberation Front.
And this was kind of a splinter group off of Earth First?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. It's always... I mean, as far as my opinion goes, it's always been its own, independent entity aside from Earth First. The thing is that the ELF, the Earth Liberation Front, has maintained an impeccable record with not hurting any living being during any of the actions. So I think it's very interesting that the government views the ELF as the biggest threat. And we have to ask ourselves, well, what is that threat? Because clearly it's not about life. It's a threat to the
property,
the establishment and the status quo and property and economic gain and profit for corporations. That's what the threat is. And so when you have activists like myself, Eric McDavid, Breonna Waters, and the list goes on and on, that have taken stands for our animal friends, for the environment, and have received 5, 6, 15, 20-year, even like Jeff Luhr's sentence was almost 23 years, I believe. I think it was 22 years and 8 months.
Now, Jeff Luhr's, what was he convicted of?
Now, Jeff Luhr's, well, just as a side note, he was resentenced because at least there was a little bit of sympathy within the court that realized that that was too harsh of a punishment. So it was reduced to a 10-year sentence, which is still very long. And he's just recently released in December. A lot of us have just recently been released, Josh Harper, myself, and Jeff Luhr's. And Jeff Luhr's was charged with burning some SUVs in Eugene. And so that was... whether or not it was dubbed as an ELF action, it was analogous to some of what ELF participants carry out.
Well, I was really surprised. You can get on YouTube, and there's the ELF recruitment video.
I didn't even realize that. I haven't spent as much time on the computer as maybe I need to. I need to get polished up. Because while I was in prison for a long time, and I'm really just still now getting kind of adjusted to life outside of prison. We didn't have access to the internet or email or the computer or anything like
that. Right. So you spent part of the time in Canada in jail and then part of the time here, right?
I did. And let me just finish a little bit about your question, and I'll get to my time in prison in Canada and stuff. But I think it's very interesting to look at how the lengthy sentences that those of us get that are protecting the environment, that are taking a stand for human issues, animal rights issues, the planet, and in comparison to people that literally murder other people, it's very telling that the government is very concerned about maintaining this power structure and this corporate rights over literally human rights, animal rights, and the protection of the planet. And that's the bottom line. And that's the reason why those of us that have taken a stand have received such lengthy, outrageous, in my opinion, sentences. To get back to a little bit about my prison time, I was arrested in 2004 in Canada, and I spent almost 4 years up in Canada appealing to the Canadian government for political asylum, for potentially as a refugee status. I went through a lot of immigration and extradition hearings. Basically, if the U.S. wants someone, they get them. And unless you're in another country that they don't have an extradition treaty with, which are very few, and even if they don't, well, then they can just send in the Black Hawk, you know, helicopters in the middle of the night and kidnap you. And then if you're back in the States, the courts here don't care about how you were abducted or covertly brought back to the States. Once you're back on U.S. soil, then you have to face the charges. So it's actually very, very sinister, the things that are going on in this world today at the hands of the U.S. military and the government policies. And so because Canada has this extradition with the States, they basically towed the whole U.S. line. That, I mean, I was already branded as guilty in the media. Rolling Stone article put out an article while I was on the run in 2002. And I was already branded as guilty in the media and in the public. And so the Canadian government pretty much just towed that line instead of giving me a fair consideration that perhaps I was being framed, or I was being politically targeted, or that these were informants that, you know, that basically saved themselves in exchange to implicate me. They basically denied all of my arguments, all of my claims. And all along, I had U.S. attorneys too that were kind of working on things down here. And by February of 2008, they said to me, you know, I had exhausted almost all of my avenues of appeal or proceedings. I had the Supreme Court of Canada, which was the last. And they said, look, if all of the under courts have denied your arguments, the Supreme Court of Canada is not going to overturn them. So why don't you come back and let's prepare for trial? And so I came back the last day of February in 2008, and then I had my arraignment, because I was never even arraigned on these charges, because
You were gone before they could do that.
I was gone.
Okay, let me just... you're listening to More Talk Radio, and I'm Marianne Barasonic, and my guest is Trey Arrow. So that was in 2008, and then you came back to the U.S.?
Mm-hmm, yes. And so then I had to make the decision of going to trial and being vindicated and being free, which, of course, I wanted, or taking a plea agreement, which as soon as I came back from Canada, ironically, the prosecutor approached my lawyers asking if I would be interested in making a plea. And I said, sure, time served, you know, non-cooperation plea agreement, time served, so I can just be out. And he was not going to go for that. So I really didn't want to go. I really didn't want to do any more time in prison. I really only wanted to take a plea if it meant not spending any more time in prison. So that decision of either going to trial or taking a non-cooperation plea agreement was actually very difficult, because some folks might not realize that I was literally looking at a life sentence if I went to trial and was found guilty.
Well, and I think at that point, other people had been given these really long sentences. So
Absolutely.
It was definitely not an empty threat.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, and very, very close to home, you know, again, Brianna Waters' case was something that really affected mine, because she was found guilty and sentenced only a month after I returned, in March of 08.
Now, did she have a trial, or did she plead?
She took it to trial. See, she's one of the few of us that took it to trial, and I commend her for maintaining her innocence, for standing her ground, and for taking it to trial, because it's almost always a bigger risk to take it to trial. If you're found guilty, it's almost always more of a sentence than if you take a plea ahead of time, because they have to do a whole lot more work. The prosecutors don't want to do work. So in order to go to trial and be found guilty, then they really bring the hammer down. And, you know, to this day, she still maintains her innocence. She was given a 6-year sentence, at least 6 years, and she's way out in Maryland, you know, half like the opposite end of the continent to her partner and her little child. And so her lawyer, Bob Bloom, was a good friend of mine and my lawyers. And he said to my family, just tell Trey to take the plea, because there's still too much fear, too much paranoia, too much brainwashing.
Right. And this all happened right after 9/11.
Yeah.
And that was when, you know.
Well, all this stuff started going down shortly after September 11th of 2001. You know, I was indicted in August of 2002. And a lot of these other cases, like Eric McDavid, Brianna Waters, Jonathan Paul.
Do you think that there wouldn't have been the follow-through there was if 9/11 hadn't happened?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, that's definitely up for debate. I think what happened with the passage of the Patriot Act.
Okay, and we have a phone caller. Good morning.
Yes, hello?
Hi, Levi.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, you're doing all this time and they wouldn't even give you time served, man. And that was like 4 years you did in jail. I'm just wondering what you were charged with and, you know, all this stuff that went along with this sentence. It seems kind of harsh, you know?
Well, I appreciate the question. I actually did get credit for time served. And so what I was initially charged with 14 counts that were all related to two separate arsons, everything from conspiracy to commit arson to possession of incendiary device, and several counts, again, all amounting to 14 different counts. When I took this non-cooperation plea agreement, 12 of the 14 were dropped, and so I ended up pleading guilty to two separate arsons, one arson for Ross Island Sand and Gravel and one arson for Schoeppert Logging. And under the statute, they actually didn't do me any favor by giving me time served. It's written in the statute that if one serves any kind of formal detention, whether it's in another country or in the country that is seeking the extradition, that time has to be considered. So that's why by the time I was sentenced in 08, I had already put in more than 4 years of time. So that's why I was able to get out in 09.
Right. So did you have a tail on you at that point? Did they give you time served and that was it?
Well, not time served. I mean, by the time I was sentenced in August of 08, I had already been locked up for almost 4.5 years. And
right.
I was given a 78-month sentence, which is 6.5 years. Mm. And then when you subtract good time, statutory mandatory
right.
guideline,
right, right.
And then
right.
Basically I had to be locked up for almost a year more in prison, and then another 6 months after that was still confinement within home confinement in halfway house up until just December of this last year.
That's ridiculous, man. That's pretty absurd. Now, by chance, do you have any numbers of? It doesn't matter to me. I'm just wondering, you know, did you burn forest? Or what was part of the arson thing? It still doesn't register, you know. I just don't know what was burned.
The logging trucks were burned at Schoeppert Logging, and sand and gravel trucks, cement trucks were burned at Ross Island. They were trucks.
Okay,
yeah.
And thank you very
much. That's pretty lame. All right, thank you so much for
thank you, Levi.
All right, thank you, Levi.
All right, take care.
Now, do you think that the political atmosphere is changing? I guess you haven't been out long enough, and it's been hard to kind of keep track of what's been going on while you've been in prison.
Well, I have done my best to keep track, to, you know, to follow up, keep abreast on some things, and I have been able to. I mean, there was a period of time where I was almost completely out of touch with things, and so that was a little difficult. And then I've been getting back up to speed, and it's hard to say. Things right now are very intense, for sure. And I think that the political environment is always changing, of course. And I think it's definitely more dire right now than it's ever been on many fronts when it comes to the persecution for activists that are taking a stand, and also the kind of measures that are being passed, the laws, bills that are being passed, like the Supreme Court of Canada, or sorry, the Supreme Court of the U.S. just deciding that now corporations have even more rights than they've had in the past. I mean, things are getting even more and more dire for human rights, for the protection of the planet, for even our civil liberties. So I think it's imperative that more and more people are being aware of what's going on and really take a stand and take some action towards these things.
Okay, and we have another caller. Good morning. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning to you folks.
Good morning.
First, I want to thank you for being what I consider to be a patriot in a country that doesn't really appreciate it, and an example to us for standing up to what you believe in.
Thank you.
One question I'll leave you with is I noticed that a lot of ELF, or Earth First people, were found and arrested during the Bush administration, and they hunted them all over the all over the world, even in South Africa.
Yes.
Using all of the, total information awareness type, data mining techniques that they could do to find everybody, but they never found anybody on the right, all the abortion bombers, abortion clinics. And I was just wondering, how do you see the government going after all the activists on the left side of the spectrum, but the right side of the spectrum, they leave them alone?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you from Matt for your comment and question. And this ties into what I was saying when Levi called in, that I would like to finish talking about, and that is, Marianne, you were asking me about if September 11th really kind of propelled the FBI or the government to really seek out these activists, and myself and other people, would we have been found or prosecuted if September 11th hadn't happened? And I think we still would have. I think what happened was after September 11th, 2001, with the passage of the Patriot Act, that it opened up the floodgates really for the government and the FBI, CIA, National Security Agency, all kinds of covert operations to really invade and violate a lot of people's rights and civil rights, and almost do anything necessary to get a conviction, to get some people apprehended,
well,
that they viewed as threats.
Right now, Obama has been given the power to basically run a hit squad.
I know, I heard that the other day, including, U.S. citizens that are in Afghanistan or Iraq or other places that are deemed as a threat, they're allowed to be shot. I mean, that's outrageous.
Is there restrictions that it has to be in another country?
Yeah, maybe not. Let's wake up and let's tell the truth, folks. This is not a democracy. This is fascism under the guise of democracy at best. And a lot of the things that Bush and Obama have been doing or been saying are analogous to a lot of things that happened in Nazi Germany. And I think it's very interesting. And again, I appreciate the last caller's comments on this. And that's what I was saying before about just the amazing hypocrisy that our government views folks within the ALF, the Animal Liberation Front, the ELF, the Earth Liberation Front, to be such a threat when they conduct actions that harm no life, yet folks on the right that are literally murdering people are viewed as less of a threat. And it's very indicative of the kind of threat that we pose as speaking the truth, as taking a stand to this very entrenched power structure and this coalition between government and corporate policy that is leaving egregious environmental degradation in its wake, as well as human rights, animal rights violations, civil rights, and human rights violations. And so I think it's important for people to really look at this and and ask themselves, you know, where our tax money is going, you know, who did I vote for, and how can we really rearrange this power structure, this economic, political and social structure that we are part of, because it simply is not working except for the elite.
Okay, and you're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barisonic. My guest is Trey Arrow. And coming up on KBOO at 9 o'clock, it's the Ole Moe Variety Hour. Today's topics include wage labor, how wages are often stolen from workers by their employers, why wage labor of all kinds can be called a form of slavery, and whether a world is possible without wage slavery. At 10 o'clock, it's Locus Focus with host Barbara Bernstein. Today, we'll hear several perspectives on what to do about the Columbia River crossing. Guests include Metro Councilor Robert Liberty, Portland Mayor Sam Adams, and Vancouver's new mayor, Mike Leavitt. At 11, we'll hear from Health Watch with host Dr. David Naiman, an interview with New York Times health and science writer Anand O'Connor about his book, The 10 Things You Need to Eat and More Than 100 Easy and Delicious Ways to Prepare Them. At 11:30, we'll hear some public affairs special programming called License to Kill. Host Shahid Hamid interviews Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes of the Albina Ministerial Alliance about the recent Portland police killing of Aaron Campbell and the community response to that. And if you'd like to join the conversation with Trey Arrow here, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning. Joanne.
Yes, hello. Hello, Trey.
Hello, Joanne.
I don't want to cry because, you know, people can't handle it. But I feel bad about the way you and others are being treated. And I guess criminals like Bush, Cheney, you, and a whole bunch of them will never get punished for their crimes. But I heard a year or two ago, and it was on Democracy Now! Or someplace, that Bush Jr. bought 90,000 acres of land, I believe, in Paraguay. And this may be a frivolous thing to ask you, but I think I'll go ahead anyway. Do you know or understand why criminals like that do this type of thing? But anyway, thank you for everything.
Thank you. Thank you for your support. And you know, and a little bit along what she said, I mean, if folks, it is abominable what this government is doing to folks that dissent. You know, like it is literally part of our constitutional right. Even Abraham Lincoln, you know, a president of this country, said that, you know, that this government and its institutions belongs to the people, and that at any time, if the people shall grow weary of this government, that they can exercise their constitutional right of overthrowing it. And
I don't think that's a constitutional right that's been recognized lately.
No, I don't think so either. And the thing is that folks that speak those words even are labeled as the big T word, you know, terrorist.
Right. Well, and I think that curtailment of free speech has been had a very big chilling effect. I'm always amazed that Derek Jensen gets away with as much as he does. But I think he's considered, because he keeps saying that he's just going to keep writing books.
Yes.
So it's easier for him.
I don't know. I think what people can do, if they're outraged that there is so much injustice, please do something about it. If you're outraged that, like myself, thank goddess I'm out of prison right now, yet there are still them. And there's a whole slew of support that prisoners need while they're in prison, and I would say just as much, if not more, once they are released, because a lot of prisoners are not – we don't make any money in prison. You know, a lot of people are completely disenfranchised by the time that they leave, and – especially if there's any kind of lengthy sentence. I mean, some people say any more than a day is too long, you know. And, I mean, so if you're talking about people that are serving 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, that is a huge chunk of time that one is surrounded by and bombarded by a lot of harassment, intimidation, dysfunction. Some of the most unhealthy things that you can imagine are part of what a prison industrial complex setting is. And I really urge people to really support those prisoners once they get released to see if they can help them, you know, find really good jobs, something that they enjoy doing, not just something to pay the bills with, and, you know, and help them out with, in whatever kind of basic needs that they need to just kind of help cushion the blow, because it is a certain element of institutionalization that happens, and also there's a certain acclimation period that might take a while. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of parallels between war and prison.
How do you mean?
Well, there's, as far as the stress, as far as the post-traumatic stress, it literally is a battle in prison. I mean, constantly, day after day, I was faced with either
you went on a hunger strike too,
mm-hmm,
didn't you?
Mm-hmm, yeah, I
and
went on
that was over food.
Well,
ironically,
it was a 44-day hunger strike, so I went 44 days with no food, and it was a combination of things. I was calling attention to the fact that I was being politically targeted by the FBI. It was also an effort to call solidarity to all those that are suffering around the world at the hands, directly at the hands of corporate agendas, or definitely as a result of corporate agendas and how much waste and how much destruction is created because of the corporate paradigm, and then also, yeah, as a kind of a call to like having healthy food and you know, and clean pure water in prison. So that was that was an experience.
Do you have restrictions on who you can associate with now that you're out?
No, thank goddess I don't have any, you know, explicit names saying you cannot be around this person, you cannot associate with this person. So I'm grateful for that. And just following up a little bit with the last caller, I think I don't really know about, you know, about presidents or ex-presidents getting land in other countries and stuff. I think they do a lot of things to try to maintain what they think is a level of security and safety if the fit hits the shan, and where they can maybe run to and hide out. I don't know. But again, if people want to do you asked me about the parallels between war and prison. I just would say that there's, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you're faced with some of the most violent, hostile people, whether they're staff or whether they're other prisoners. And the level of stress, the post-traumatic stress, people coming out of prison, people coming out of war, there's a lot of similarities that way.
Now, your environmental work, for the most part, was nonviolent direct action.
Correct.
Tree sits, and then you were famous, of course, for sitting on the ledge on,
yes,
the building in Portland for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that method of protest is effective?
Which method?
Nonviolent direct action.
Well, this is what I think. First of all, I would love to see more people doing something, whether that's riding a bike instead of driving an automobile, whether that's writing a letter instead of just sitting on a couch and doing nothing, whether that's taking the streets and marching and rallying, or whether that's climbing on buildings or in trees or sitting, you know, doing lockdowns or sit-ins in certain political politicians' offices or corporate executives' offices, whether that means property destruction, whether that means, you know, pavement removal. there's so many things that people can do. I'm not advocating any one thing. I want to be very clear. I'm not advocating anything. I'm just encouraging people to find their passion and find their heart and do something. And I do think that direct action, whether it's considered violent or not violent. By the way, I personally don't consider a piece of inanimate object that is raping and pillaging the earth to be a sentient being, and so I don't think that if that particular object was destroyed that is violent. Now that's up for debate. Some people do feel that that's violent or think that that's violent, and that's, you know, that's up for debate. So the point is that I think that whether something is considered violent by the activist or by the general public, that folks should act upon their passion and their heart and do something that they are moved to do to create and affect more positive change in our culture and our society, and hold those entities accountable that are literally pillaging the planet, that are violating human rights and civil liberties, and that are also wiping out our animal friend population, whether it's on a domestic level with fur and with animal testing, or whether it's in the wild with all of the desecration to habitat.
Okay, and just to interrupt here for a minute, apparently there was a issue over the Vancouver mayor's name, and I think Tim Leavitt is the Vancouver, British Columbia mayor, but we're probably in the announcement for Locus Focus, it's Vancouver, Washington is Mike Leavitt. Okay, so let's get back. You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barasonic. My guest is Trey Arrow. If you want to call in, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. So do you plan on continuing your activism? It sounds like you're
absolutely
not going to, you know, get a corporate job and...
No way. Absolutely. I'm just as passionate for being a voice for these voices that are commonly left unheard or that are ignored, like the voice for the trees, for the environment, for our animal friends, and for even the those of us in the human community that are typically forgotten or excluded, like folks that are homeless or that are even minorities, in the indigenous communities. There's a lot of violation still going on at the hands of corporate and government.
Okay,
executives.
And we've got another caller. Good morning. Art?
Yes. Trey?
Yes.
congratulations on receiving your reduced sort of sentencing. I think that's something.
Thank you.
I know it's hard to say, but could have been worse.
Could have been worse, yes, that's true.
My question is about tactics and the big picture. You have to look at the big picture, the long-range effects of environmental damage and all that.
Absolutely.
And as a part of the discussion, we really have to be informed as completely as possible about which things are the worst, having the worst impact. And I have to say it's the automobile. But you can argue that an SUV is suitable when you're pulling a trailer. You want a big rig to pull a trailer, but if you're using the SUV to go to the grocery store two blocks away. I agree totally that the car is having its impact, but on the other sentence for the cement, I'm a fan of cement for building purposes, so I defend it as a way of in reducing environmental impact. Concrete, if we use it for housing, so it makes good foundations, and sidewalks and structural things, because cement has this definite benefit. So the big picture is what I want to get your opinion on is how you don't look at things completely in a negive way.
Okay,
you have to look at a little bit of the positive way. Do you know what I'm saying there, Trey?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Art.
Yeah, thanks, Art. I do think it's important to focus on as much as we can on positive instead of negative. Even though there's so much negativity bombarded by the media, by the mainstream media, and within our culture, I think that there is positive elements to everything that we can focus on. And I'm not saying that everything that has a destructive effect doesn't have a certain purpose. I don't want folks to be confused with me and Jeff Lewis. It sounded like Art was a little confused with my sentencing and Jeff's. Like I did not get a reduced sentence. I did not burn you SUVs. That was Jeff Lewis' case, and my case was logging trucks and cement and gravel trucks. And while I hear what you're saying about cement, there in my opinion there are better ways to build things, more natural, more sustainable ways that don't include mining and pillaging, like say the Ross Island. For folks that don't know, take a look at what Ross Island was and what it is now, and the environmental degradation that has happened just in this one little spot here in Portland. And
okay, and we're gonna take another caller. Good morning, Beth.
Oh, hi. I'm amazed, Trey, that you're out. I thought you'd never get out.
Yeah, some people do.
How long altogether were you in?
Almost 6 years, including, if you include the halfway house and the home confinement time, yes.
Oh, I'm so glad you're out.
Thank you.
This it really makes my day to hear you, your voice, that you're on KBOO and talking.
Thank you.
Oh, I've thought about you so much when you climbed the building and when you were waiting in Canada to be brought back here. I just, you know, it just, nothing made sense to me about the way they were going after you and the way they were going after others too. But
yes.
Anyway, I'm a great lover of nature, and this, we talk a lot in KBOO about corporations being people.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, there is just no way. The living things around us that are being ignored have more, they have more life.
Absolutely.
Than the corporations do. They're just, you know, money suckers.
Yes.
But anyway, thank you so much for all the work you've done. You are my hero.
Thank you, Beth.
You are an amazing person. I hope whatever you do, I would like to, I couldn't hear anything when I was waiting on the phone, so I don't know what you've been specifically talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Ross Island, when I was a little girl, I remember it.
Yes.
You know, I'm 65.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an island.
Mm-hmm.
And we took our little kayak and would go around the island. I mean, it was just amazing, the wildlife. And now when I cross over the Ross Island Bridge, I can't believe there's like these big, I think they're cell towers. I don't know. I'm not a mechanical genius, but looks like there's four cell towers that sort of come down, and they end up with where the tram starts to go up at OHSU.
Mm-hmm.
There's this little strip of land with some, you know, funky looking trees that look like they're just about ready to keel over, and that's the island.
I know. There's hardly anything left.
It.
I know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call, Beth.
Thank you.
All right. And we have another caller. I think we just lost Beth, but okay. Well, Trey, while we're waiting for the other caller to get queued up here, the problem I think a lot of people have, even if they agree with a lot of what you're saying, is that there doesn't seem to be an alternative to this way of life. Most of us have grown up in this culture and in this environment, and to even start thinking about giving up cars is just incomprehensible.
I know. Yeah, it's you know, I encourage people to do some traveling, you know, in the most eco-friendly way, of course, and visit other cultures and spend time with the indigenous people, because they, you know, there are a lot of people that are still living a traditional way of life, of subsistence existence, and can perhaps enlighten people to see how little we really need to be happy and to survive, and how much this culture wastes, and how much we consume, and how much is just completely extraneous.
Okay, and we're going to take another caller now. Good morning, Camus.
Good morning. Hey, Trey.
Hey, Camus. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
All right.
I was calling because I wasn't sure if you guys were going to touch up on it, but I wanted to see if you could comment on the Eagle Creek tree sit and how nonviolent direct action does actually work.
I appreciate the call and the point to that, you know, because Marianne did ask me a little bit ago, just, you know, does the nonviolent direct action work? And I did talk a bit about how I do still think that it's important for folks to take action, whether it's considered direct action, whether it's considered violent or not. And certainly the ledge sit that I was part of was a phenomenal action that was part of the entire decade-long campaign to save Eagle Creek. And there were folks like myself and others, some of the callers, some of the people that are still in this community here that were part of those tree sits out at Eagle Creek. And for folks that may not know or may not remember, that sale was canceled. And in 2002, shortly before I was indicted for these arsons, that sale, Eagle Creek, was canceled. And so it does show that direct action does work, that peaceful civil disobedience does work.
Right, but here's the problem. So the Eagle Creek sale was canceled.
Yes.
But logging in general runs amok.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's, yeah, I mean, so the thing is that we, that's why I think it's important that we diversify our tactics, you know, and that everybody can do something, even those folks that are, like you were mentioning, that are kind of stuck in a certain mentality that they think that they can't do this, or they can't give up their vehicle, or they can't do certain things that are maybe outside of their comfort zone. Well, I encourage people to get outside of their comfort zone and take action in whatever form that is, because the more that people are doing something, then the more that we are able to create part a solution rather than contribute to more of the problem.
Okay, and we have another caller. Good morning. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there. Congratulations on getting out.
Thank you, Steve.
I wanted to make a few comments and give you some encouragement. Sorry about the cold. I sound a bit gruff.
No worries.
But down in Red Bluff, a while back, before Jeff Lores got arrested, there was a guy who set fire on some Forest Service roads. And there happened to have been a ranger following him, putting him out. And, of course, this guy didn't even care whether there was anybody in the woods or homes or anything else. He was just setting them because he was a contractor, you know, and he had heavy equipment, and he wanted a fire to pay for that equipment. He got off with nothing. Judge let him go because he was a pillar of the community. And it just is, a thing here. There seems to be a real cultural thing that destroys empathy and compassion. I had a discussion with some conservative Christian kids about unions, and brought up the Ludlow massacre, you know, and said, you know, they were putting down unions and all this stuff, and I said, do you think this is right that, you know, the tents of with women and children should be fired on with machine guns and rifles? And they justified it. They said, well, what do you call it when a striker busts a beer bottle over, you know, a scab's head? This is the perspective they have.
Yes.
So you have a culture that actually militates against compassion for, you know, others, even themselves. So the real work is actually amazing. It's rebuilding an entire cultural worldview and overcoming that. But I wanted to encourage you because I came out of that world, and listening to folks like you and Cable over the years, there were enough things of truth that I couldn't suppress that didn't fit in with that worldview. And when I kept hearing you guys and people from KABU talking, I said, wait a minute. These people are talking the truth here, and these others have to suppress this stuff.
Yes.
And eventually it got through.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Steve.
Sure thing. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And
all right.
I think he brings up a really good point. It's that it is almost like we have to turn around a whole worldview before anything's going to change substantially.
And that starts with turning off your TV. I mean, quite seriously, I encourage people to get involved in a lot of groups and organizations here, right here in town. Portland is one of the biggest hotspots, in my opinion, in the entire nation for consciousness, for eco-friendly community activism and organization. City Repair is doing a whole month long abolishing the apathy campaign. So I encourage people to get plugged into that all month long. BARC, the local awesome group that helps to educate people about forest issues and get sales canceled. They do a monthly hike. They just did one yesterday. They do one, I guess it's the second Sunday of every month. So anyway, people can check these things out online and get plugged in. And that's the thing, is that we need to really eradicate apathy in whatever way people can do that. And again, that's one reason why I say turn off the television, because that is really one thing to keep people disconnected, keep them apathetic, keep them complacent.
And the commercialization, because you're bombarded with commercials that keep telling you that you need to buy things
to be happy.
And right. And the more you buy into that, it's kind of like this trap that sucks you in.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Then you have to keep working to pay for the things. And
yes.
Yeah.
And just like last caller was speaking of, you know, we must find the areas in ourselves that has that the empathy and the compassion, because we all possess that, whether it's been beaten out of us or brainwashed out of us or stripped from us one way or another, we can access it and we can find it and we can let that flourish and blossom. And the more that we have that, the more that we spend time in nature, the more that we spend time with things that, that are meaningful to us, then the more that we can be enrich others and be effective, even that much more effective to what we're passionate about.
Now, you originally came from Florida, right?
Yes.
And Florida hasn't exactly been a hotbed of environmental activism.
No.
But when I was listening to Democracy Now! This morning, they were talking about an action there where people were trying to stop the offshore oil drilling
yes.
from coming back.
Yes.
And seems to me like maybe things are... people are starting to get more conscious of what's going on.
I certainly think so. When I was growing up there, I was not aware of anything that is going that was going on like there is now. And while I was just back there in December visiting family, actually, and I had a speaking engagement down in Lake Worth talking about these same things that we're talking about today. And there's a whole community there, specifically right there in Lake Worth, that are doing amazing things for the environment, for opposing FPL, Florida Power and Light, which is just wanting to wipe out more and more native habitat, which there isn't that much left anyway, destroy the Everglades so that they can create some of these the largest power plants in the at least in the state, if not in the nation. And Florida is already riddled with a lot of nuclear power plants, and they will just stop at nothing for making more and more money. And so I'm happy to say that there is a level of consciousness and awareness and outright activism that's going on in Florida that I was never aware of when I was growing up. So I'm very, very honored and happy that that's happening.
Okay, and you're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barisonic. My guest is Trey Arrow. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. Well, now, the other place that you spent a lot of time in was Vancouver, B.C.
Yes.
And you saw some of the preparations for the Olympics
going on. Yes, fortunately, I was there for almost a year between summer of 03 and then for about a good half a year from the summer of 03 till about January of 04. And while I was there, I was witness, because they had already won the bid, of course, for the Olympics, and there was already talk in opposition to the way that the homelessness and the poverty and the poor would be rounded up and would be basically excavated, and that's exactly what's happening. And the whole Democracy Now! An hour before us here was talking with the whole show was focused on a lot of the civil rights and the human rights issues there. They didn't talk too much, unfortunately, about the environmental damage. While I was there, I was witness to mountains being blown away and of course forests being wiped out so that they could widen the road from Vancouver all the way up to Whistler, which is one of the major ski resorts there, specifically for the Olympic Games. So it's important for people to realize that these Olympics, in my opinion, must be stopped as they are. It's one of the largest now corporate entities on the planet, and it's just been completely usurped. What it usually was, which is what is typical in our culture, is that it's now become a huge commercialization and taxpayer funded corporate advertisement and security for this corporate structure, and any voices of dissent are either criminalized or ostracized. And I think it's important for people to really look at a lot of the negative impacts behind these Olympic Games, and specifically the environmental degradation that happens at the hands of infrastructure building and preparation for millions of people.
Yeah, to me it's amazing. Who's it? Jeff Lures burned some SUVs, mm-hmm. and he got like 22 years mm-hmm. in prison. Mm-hmm. But then the corporations can actually blow up mountains. Mm-hmm. It's called mountaintop
removal in the East Coast,
and it's considered perfectly legal.
Yes.
Okay, and we have another caller. Good morning, Ruby.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, Jay.
Good morning.
I have a question about something that I'd love to hear you speak about, which is the idea of each of us becoming the warrior that we are. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your call. And
I think you've stacked these calls, Trey.
No, I haven't. I have not. I promise I have not. I have no hand in these calls coming in. People are acting upon their own heart and their own volition, and I am happy to hear and answer all that I can. And as I talked about before, I think it's really important that we as a people, especially as a non-native people, really get in touch with the indigenous people. That I think that it's important that we connect with our own roots, wherever our ancestral roots take us, because most people are from another country, you know, of origin, and we don't know our ancestral roots. We don't have the rites of passage in this culture that all the indigenous people have had for millennia. And that rites of passage is paramount in giving that person purpose and a mission for their life, and also for helping to integrate from a very intense part of, like, say, a childhood, adolescent into adulthood. And we in this culture have a bunch of ridiculous, dysfunctional, disconnected images and ideologies around bringing a child from adolescence into adulthood. And I think that we all possess a certain quality, whether it is the quality of a warrior or the quality of a person who kind of helps to create a very strong foundation for community and for it. There's a saying that says it takes a village to raise a child. And so all of us, whether we're men or women, have these qualities in us. And we have both of these within us. We have the masculine and we have the feminine. And so I think it's important that we access these things and really follow our passion, again, in our heart. And I think it's very important that people spend time with indigenous people to learn some of those things that we have lost.
Okay, and we've got another caller. Oh, nope, we lost the caller. Okay, and we're running out of time here, so I want to thank you, Trey, very much for coming in. You've been listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barasonic. My guest has been Trey Arrow. And you have a web page?
I do, yeah. People can check out, for folks that were wondering. You can email me at trey@riseup.net. That's TRE@RISEUP.net. And you can check out the website that I have posted up. It's just my name, Trey Arrow, TREARROW.org.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
It's your KBOO Community Calendar Girl here for Monday, February 15th, 2010.